This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 Joycast. In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited to make this Joycast possible. For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Fool and the Opera. Now, as you may know by now, my name is Dan Vo and I'll be your host for the rest of this evening, and I'll be taking you through a bit of an explorative journey of opera, popra, which is when opera and pop combine, and also bringing a few other different strange and bizarre genres into the mix as well. It's not your average opera show, as you may know, and usually we actually use opera as a bit of a way to discuss all sorts of strange and wonderful little topics that relate back to contemporary life and relate to your life and to my life, and sort of finding ways for opera actually to connect with the everyday person, I suppose. So it is opera for beginners, by beginners, and it's really for the people. So this is The Fool and the Opera. I do hope that you'll stick around for the rest of the hour. Thank you very much to Vito and Bill and Penelope for doing another wonderful show of Behind the Scenes, and also to Gary for doing the news as well. And I don't know about the cultural aspect. You know, he said that I was very cultural. I'm really not sure, but all the same, we'll see how we go. Now, I spent the last couple of days on a little property that, there was a conference there, and we gathered together a few different people within the community development sectors. And of course, there was, a bit of disability services, there was healthcare, local government, and a few other different people gathered. And of course, I represented community broadcasting. And we gathered to sort of talk about volunteering and how volunteering really is the backbone of a lot of community development, and also a really important aspect of what you can give to your local community. So I thought I'd pick a track this evening. I picked it this morning that relates directly to volunteering. It's a very interesting song. It's written by Queen on their first album, A Night at the Opera. And we haven't done alternative music for quite a while, sort of indie music. So I thought I'd pick a track that, has that sort of flavor to it. And so you kind of get a feel for the story as well. And it's very beautiful lyrics that are attached to this. So I'd like you to have a listen to the lyrics and see what you think they're about. And when we come back, I'll explain the story to you. Now, this is done by an artist called The Pacific Ocean from an album called So Beautiful and Cheap and Warm. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
In the sand for the day I take your hand in the land that our grandchildren knew. Don't you hear my call, though you're many years away? Don't you hear me calling you? All your letters in the sand cannot heal me like your hand. For my life still ahead, pity me.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. And that last track, it's a beautiful little track, isn't it? And I just love that particular singer's voice. It, of course, was the Pacific Ocean. It's such a beautiful song. And I love vocal and guitar. It's just the most rawest of musical creations, I think. Now, the song is about, of course, volunteering. And volunteering is very important, of course, because, for example, the station here, we depend on, basically volunteers fuel the station, is what we say. And, we depend on volunteering. And if there's a there's a, I suppose, a bit of a calling sometimes that, you know, at some point in your life, and a lot of our volunteers are like this, at some point in their life, they've either done, you know, corporate and they wish to atone for their sins, so they come to join the station, or they're just looking to connect with a community. And, well, this is the sort of space that you can do that in. And volunteering across Australia is a very important aspect of community development, of course, and also just creating local communities. So you can check out joy.org.au and click on the links, and you can check out the volunteering opportunities that are available at the moment. But beyond that, the story of volunteering in this particular song is all about 20 volunteers getting into a little ship. It's in the future, so presumably 2039 or 3039, doesn't really matter, but the Earth is dying, and these 20 volunteers go out into space to look for a new planet that they can, that people can live on. And they come back a year later, still in 39, of course, so within a year they're back. And what they found is they've been traveling at the speed of light, so when they come back to Earth, well, a whole new generation has gone through, and one of the volunteers goes back to his family, and they're not there anymore. His wife isn't there. He sees the eyes of his wife in his son, and so it's a sort of a melancholic song, but it's quite beautiful at the same time as well. And I suppose that one of the things that you know, we all try and aim for in volunteering is to create a better world. So if you are interested in volunteering, please do go onto the Joy website. Now, in my excitement about talking all about volunteering, I've managed to miss somehow talking about the most exciting thing about today's show, which is the fact that I get to talk to operatic superstar, or well, I should say operatic super spunk, David Hobson. There was a bit at the intro where I said, prepare your bibs lest you drool during the interview, as I did. And it was quite embarrassing because I remember David just kind of pausing going, really? So we've cut that out and we've just gone straight into the business. So please do enjoy this interview with David Hobson. It was a bit of a thrill for me to interview him, and we'll be talking with him about the Robert Blackwood Hall concert series, and also the Music of the Round, which is coming up in September 20, which coincides with the week of my birthday. Just putting it out there. And there's going to be some excellent performers sort of performing on a whole day at Monash in Clayton, I believe it is, of an outstanding lineup of all different genres and different dynamic and eclectic performers. So do check it out. And here is the interview highlights of my interview with the wonderful David Hobson. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. We'll start with the business. We're here to talk about Music in the Round at Monash on Sunday 19, when you'll be part of a quite a big music festival, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. It sounds... there's so many different acts, and I mean, it's fantastic initiative they've got going on there. And they've got everything from, you know, a bit of jazz, a bit. I mean, they've got the Gregorian Brothers, Slava, and Katie Noonan, and, you know, orchestral things, and, you know, chamber ensembles and pianos, and it's fantastic. And you can literally go around to all these theatres at Monash and hear everything at will on September the 20th, amazing program they put together.
Mm, and you've got actually two parts that you'll be performing in. There's David Hobson in recital,
yep,
and David Hobson serenades everybody as well.
Yeah, well, it's the serenade is actually Benjamin Britten's serenade for tenor, horn and strings, and the horn player is Andrew Bain, and the conductor is Jeffrey Crellin. It's, I don't know if you know the piece at all, but it's a piece that Benjamin Britten wrote for his partner, Peter Pears, back in the... I think it was the 50s. And it's a beautiful piece, and for a horn as well. It's an extraordinary piece of music, absolutely beautiful.
In addition to what you're doing here at Monash University, I mean, you're also the Music Aviva Schools Ambassador, and among other things, you're also coach for the lads at the Opera School Melbourne. So it seems like you're quite a firm believer in sort of passing on the musical knowledge or educating in music.
Yeah, look, it's... I'll tell you, it's a hot debate at the moment, Dan, the whole music in schools and education situation. I've heard recently that they're wanting to make music a subject or a compulsory subject in primary schools, at least. I know that. And they're wanting classroom teachers to teach music and without, you know, prior knowledge. And I think that's a dangerous thing at the moment. I'm talking about a political musical topic here. I probably shouldn't be there. But look, yes, I am passionate about music and music education and passing down the baton. And I mean, I've been mentored by some great people in the past. I think you really do have to pass the baton down. And I've got two young kids myself, so I understand the necessity for, you know, giving kids a sound education in music. I mean, the thing about music, Dan, is that there are intrinsic and extrinsic benefits. Mm. And, you know, intrinsically it's all about uplifting the soul and an experience which you can't otherwise get and you can't really explain it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, music is is food for the soul. But kind of extrinsically, the benefits cross over into kids' education, like it's great for numeracy, you get, you know, languages, there's a mathematical kind of equation dealing with music. It's a, you know, it's just a, it's a tool that I think is of vital importance for kids, and culturally some of us have been bereft.
Mm. So you're speaking, of course, in terms of the framework, that the thinking that music gives you.
Yeah. I mean, I think it really does. And I think, particularly in Australia, I mean, we've tend to kind of identify, nothing wrong with this, but, you know, we've really identified strongly with sport as being our, you know, cultural emblem. And I think sometimes music and the arts gets a little bit of a backseat. So it'd be great if it was kind of given more of a, a forefront front seat, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, what do you think would be the good things that we could do in order to sort of push that to the fore of the agenda?
Well, I think a lot of it stems from, obviously, education to begin with, and really giving teachers a sound musical education. And giving kids, because, you know, it's got to be the next generation that makes the leap forward, because, you know, I'm already there. So I think it's about giving kids, first of all, educating teachers to be able to go and teach kids, give them a sound basis of strong Western musical education, you know, which is where our roots are, which you can then learn about other indigenous, musical roots music. But I don't think, you know, music education should be sitting in a schoolroom listening to CDs. You know, I think you've got to learn the rules. It's like let's say you go to a football game and you go to watch an AFL game you've never been before. You don't know the rules, you don't know the players, you don't identify with any of the teams. You're not going to get much out of it.
Mm.
Whereas if you actually have a passion for the game, or from a young age, you you kind of get branded a Collingwood supporter or blah, blah, blah. You learn the rules, you identify with the players, you get more out of the game. So I think it's the same with music. You know, we've got to be culturally immerse ourselves with music to really get the full benefit out of it.
So is that something that you had growing up as well, just having that really strong musical culture?
Well, I was lucky enough to be in a relatively musical household. I mean, my father was kind of, he sang around the traps in Ballarat. I grew up in Ballarat, and so there was always kind of soirees happening at our place. And I have four sisters who also played the piano. So music was a relatively strong component in our family. So I was lucky in that respect. So, and I think, I grew up in the 60s where it was still the done thing for people to go to other people's place and there would be a piano and people would, you know, stand around the piano and sing. See, that doesn't really happen as much anymore. We're a bit more fragmented. We tend to isolate ourselves in iPods or computers and listen to music that way. Whereas, you know, actually the idea of music is kind of culturally telling each other stories and doing it as a commune. Mm. I think that has to, that's what has to happen musically. You know, it's not about going and singing to backing tracks, or it's about creating music together and some sort of community harmony.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. And that was a bit of David Hobson and Teddy Tahu Rhodes there. Two of the most attractive men in opera, I think, for a long time. So, yeah, I think Teddy Tahu Rhodes has the title as being the best abs in the business. Of course, there are a few tenors out there and baritones and whatnot that I know who are trying to challenge that as well. But I think it's yet to be proven. But anyway, you're on The Fool and the Opera. And we just played, it was the Pearlfisher song, it was the duet. And
I think, one of the most beautiful songs that you can have. And we were talking with Jerry earlier about who the composer was, and we decided that it was Georges Bizet. But of course, I think Georges Bizet is the proper way to pronounce it. But who knows? I always get my pronunciation incorrect anyway. But of course, we are talking with David Hobson today because he's going to be in Monash University this coming Wednesday. So do come check it out. And also Sunday 20 as well. He'll be there as well. September 20, rather, next week. So, yeah, check it out because there'll be some excellent music, and it's going to be the Gregorian Brothers playing a bit of classical and jazz guitar, and Katie Noonan as well will be doing some beautiful music. I love her music, and, well, if you like it too, it's definitely worth checking out. And, if you'd like to contribute to the program today, you can do so by SMSing 0427JOY949. For those of you with a BlackBerry, it's 0427569949, or you can give us a call, 96992949. There's the email onair@joy.org.au. And, well, if you do give Jerry a call, because he's just scouring the internet for all sorts of trinkets, so do give him a call if you've got your fingers ready to dial something. So 96992949. In the meantime, I am going to continue my interview with David Hobson because, well, he was really exciting to talk to. Amazing, too, that he was just so calm and unassuming, like such a gentleman. So that was quite an interesting aspect for me because he was one of the first people to actually ask me a question back. And for a second there, I was just kind of stumped going, But anyway, you're on The Fool and the Opera. This is the interview highlights with David Hobson.
Have you worked with children where they started off kind of not conceiving opera as a possibly fun or exciting avenue to take, then you've seen them turn around?
That they have disliked it, you mean?
Yeah, they start off going, opera, what's that?
I was like that. I mean, if you'd told me 30 years I was going to get an opera, I would have, I probably did laugh. And it wasn't until, my dad was more into musicals and, kind of jazz and swing, and I didn't grow up with opera in my household, and I didn't have a real passion for it, although I had a passion for classical music as such, but not so much the roar. So I saw it as a little bit foreign. And it was only, I actually fell into it. I fell into opera through another form of music. I was kind of a little bit discovered.
Mm.
And so I had a baptism by fire in my mid-20s. And once I understood it and really got it, I understood how passionate and amazing it was.
Because I understand that originally you were in a rock band and you're a guitarist, bass guitarist and singer.
Yeah, I used to play bass and synth in a few bands, and I was more into pop, rock, and jazz. So
I didn't even realize that they let bass players sing.
Like, sometimes Sting.
Oh, okay.
Bring them out. opera was latent for me. But of course, I love it. And as I said, it's like music. It's, well, what I'm talking about with education. Once you actually understand it and get into it, you grow a you don't have to like it, but at least the choice is there because you understand it.
I mean, it sounds like your outlook on opera has changed over the years, and certainly as a composer, I suppose that you have a completely different take on it as well.
Absolutely, yeah, and possibly. By doing a bit of writing myself and composing, I tended to dissect it probably a little more closely than most singers, or try to understand a little more. And I'm just blown away by how brilliant some of these. Particularly, there was that period between the late 18th century and late to early 20th century, where it was just an explosion of talent and craft, and some of the greatest works of art were written during that period, from Mozart to Puccini. I mean, just extraordinary. Extraordinary.
I think it was one of your students at the Opera School of Melbourne, Hadley Adams, who said that he would love to be able to play the piano as well as sing, because it just gives you a whole new perspective.
Yeah. Well, that would be the instrument I'd encourage any young person to take up, because it is like having an orchestra at your fingertips to a degree. I mean, it's great learning, monophonic instrument, which is, like a single like a violin or a oboe. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, beautiful. But to have especially as a singer, to have the luxury of being able to eke out melodies and chords on a piano is fantastic.
Now, you've composed, there's musical theatre, there's a bit of chamber opera, and there's a very cool song that I fell in love with a few years ago, which is a soundtrack on a film.
Which which
one, one perfect day was there.
Yeah, that was the that was a pretty cool experience, I must admit. And initially, I hadn't intended on writing the music for it. I was just working as a music consultant, but the director, and I was really busy at the time. I think I can't remember what I was rehearsing and performing, but I literally was doing an opera and then coming home and getting the next edit and staying up till 3 or 4 in the morning writing music. So it was a bit of a strain at the time, but a lot of fun. I mean, trying to fuse the dance world, you know, techno dance world. And I had the good fortune to cross-pollinate with some pretty cool DJs like Paul Van Dyke and a friend of mine who lives in Australia, Josh Abrahams, who's quite big in the dance world as well. That was good fun. Mm. That was great fun.
Well, it seems to you, in terms of music, opera and just any other genre of music is completely interchangeable, you know, whether it be country or ballads or shock opera, yeah, as we've seen on It Takes Two.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't recommend it for anyone. I mean, I'm just one of those mad people that, yeah, I'm probably my church is pretty Catholic, as they say, pretty eclectic. But yeah, the trouble is, I love it all, Dan. And I must confess, I don't go looking for it. Things have kind of opportunities have arisen and doors have opened, and I've just kind of gone, oh, okay, yeah, I'll go down that way. You know, oh, you're interested in doing this movie about dance music? Oh, not really. Okay, I'll have a look. Yeah. And then doing those telly shows. I wasn't very keen on doing those, but I did have a lot of fun in the end.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I bet you didn't expect that. Now, what is that connection for that song to opera? Well, that was composed by none other than David Hobson. It's from an Australian film that was called One Perfect Day, and it was released in 2004. Really interesting film. I haven't yet seen it, and I really want to see it. It's about a gentleman who, basically from all the sounds around him in his environment, he sort of hears these sounds and picks up the little repetitions and is able to sort of turn it into music. So it's definitely worth checking out that film. It's called One Perfect Day. And you know what? I've just realized that I actually haven't given you the cryptic clue for the whole day today, and you know, I've kind of given it all away now. It's 20 volunteers, 2 pearl fishers, and 1 perfect day. So I'm sure that you can probably work that out by now. You know that every week I like to give you a bit of a triptych, which is 3 cryptic clues that give you an insight into what could possibly happen on the show. Now, of course, you can always SMS in 0427JOY949. Just like Grant has. Grant from Melbourne has actually said that, I love that song, Dan, and awesome Aussie movie too. So, well, there you go. That's another recommendation for you to go check out the film. Good. It's always good to support local Australian cinema and film, even in the past tense. You can still support it. Now, we are going to play a little bit more, I think, with David Hobson. I really just, it was a thrill for me to interview him. I think there's a few people that have always kind of been the pinnacle of, you know, Australian opera. They just become the pin-up people for opera, and certainly David Hobson is one of those. So this is part 3 of the interview highlights with David Hobson. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
Well, I'm curious, David, now. I wonder what is on your rider when you send your rider out to the different companies. Is it, you know, must have 2 chocolates on my bed and
I don't think
water, Evian,
water on,
you know?
Water on stage, that's all. That's about it for my rider. What is my rider? I must ask Mark, my agent, Mark Gogol. What does he actually ask for? I don't seem to... No, I don't really have one. I should, shouldn't I?
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this this whole star culture. I mean, It Takes Two is a TV show, and you came up on top twice, and a third time you came, I think, third?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was two.
Yeah, so that must have been kind of like bringing opera to the people, making it accessible again.
Look, the good thing about it was that, and I must confess, I was very hesitant about doing it, and because I was doing an opera at the time, and I said to Opera Australia, I said, look, you know, I've been asked to do this telly show, but look, you probably don't want me to do it. And I said, yes, no, you should do it. They were very keen for me to do it because it was a kind of a good opportunity for them to, you know, speak to another audience. And they were doing little postcode surveys of people in operas I was in at the time. And there was definitely, apart from being good houses, there was a shift in the demographic from where they were coming from. In Sydney and Melbourne, there were people coming more from the west, and you know the postcodes were changing from the usual operas. Mm. So we were obviously getting a different audience. I had a lot of people writing to me saying, oh, I'd never been to opera before I saw you on telly, came to the opera, loved it, blah, blah, blah. So that side of it was fantastic, I must admit. Mm. It opened up a new audience to different music. So that was great. Yeah, I agree. Very good.
Do you think that sort of sense of, I suppose, making opera more popular, or popera, I suppose, is that sort of mix between popular tracks and opera is the way that we should be heading in order to kind of keep that those audiences up?
You know what? I really don't have the answer to that. I mean, the thing is, I don't think you should dumb opera down.
Yeah.
But having said that, like if you hear a tune on an ad or, you know, you hear an aria sung somewhere and it really gets you excited and it makes you want to go and see the whole opera, well, that's fantastic. But I think sometimes that people think that, you know, they think that Phantom of the Opera is opera. So, oh yes, I've been to the opera, I went to Phantom of the Opera. Well, no, that's not opera, it's a, you know, it's a pop musical. So you've got to be careful in the sense that, you know, people think they've seen the real thing, but they actually haven't. Mm. You know, they might watch the three tenors on a bit on telly, but actually not go to the opera. But, you know, you might hook a few in.
Yeah.
So is it the way to go? Yeah, but the thing is, for the actual productions and opera itself, I don't think there's any need to change it, because that's what it is. I mean, you go and hear people in a, you know, 15 or 2,000 seat theatre, and you hear the raw power of music unamplified, without, you know, without with an acoustic orchestra, and the power of people, flesh and blood. And I think sometimes that's what people don't understand, you know, it's actually the raw power and physical demands of opera are huge, and that's kind of what's exciting about it as well.
Mm. I've read that one of the things you've said is that tenors are the risk takers in opera.
Did I?
Apparently so.
Well, you know, we sing where most people fear to tread. Try to sing those stupid high notes. There's a little bit of that, though, and I think, you know, audiences get excited by that risk taking in opera. That's part of the thrill sometimes. Well, whether it be a soprano or a baritone or, you know, but particularly tenors as well, I think. People love the fact they go out and scream their tits off, you know. I think that, you know, whatever you can do to get people through the, you know, through the doors into the auditoriums, I don't think it's such a bad thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
I might just return quickly to how you mentioned that, you know, people think that Phantom of the Opera is an opera.
Yeah.
But it's not. I mean, there's a... You know, what is it? That track by Meatloaf gets called, or the whole album by Meatloaf, Bad Outta Hell, gets called a rock opera, or on as it did on It Takes Two, was called a shock opera.
I mean, yeah. I think, you know, opera, the actual word means work. So it's when we, you know, we in Italian, that's the raw translation. But I think the fact that operatic means, or what has happened with works in the operatic repertoire, is it's like they are heightened reality, and you're taking, you know, taking people on a journey and taking them outside of themselves and really heightening moments of raw emotion. And so I guess anything that does that these days, whether it be, you know, like Meatloaf overextending himself dramatically, yeah, I guess that kind of has a what we now term an operatic quality.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with saying that. And I guess the same with, you know, well, that's Phantom of the Opera, it has the term opera in it, so people think it's opera. But I think actually Jesus Christ Superstar is a real rock opera, you know, that's kind of sung through and in that rock sense.
In terms of the emotion, is it easier to sort of get to the emotion then of a song when you're with, say, a regular partner like Marina Pryor or Yvonne Kenny or Titi Tahu Rhodes?
Mm.
Is it easier to kind of get to the emotion of a song when you're with somebody that you know and trust, or can you just do that with anybody?
No, you do have to get a rapport. And when you're on a performance space or a music space, there's a, you know, there's kind of a secret handshake that performers know. So you go out there and you kind of open up your chest cavity and see the bleeding heart. So when a performer does that, and those performers do, but those three you mentioned all do that, you're going to give over more, because they give over more. Whereas someone who doesn't understand that or doesn't have that ability to open up, then it's more difficult. Does that make sense?
Mm, it does.
And sometimes half of what you do with, say even it takes two situations, is teaching them how to give over to another performer, to open themselves up, be vulnerable and be honest. Because that's the best a partner can do. It's less about the craft and more about the honesty.
How do you kind of build on that? Like, how do you reach that point? Is there a sort of like an enlightenment moment where you just know that that's now we've hit a partnership?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's any... You build a rapport. Sometimes you have an automatic rapport with someone, you know. But it really is about kind of... and it's the same with singing, because to sing properly, a lot of the time you have to get rid of extraneous habits, and it's the same when you're working in a partnership. You know, you try to get rid of layers so that you both get to a point where you're both comfortable, I guess. And the same with acting. So when actors work well together, they, you know, part of the craft is getting rid of barriers, if you will, so they can open up and then perform with each other on stage.
Mm.
Does that kind of make sense? I don't know if it doesn't.
It does.
It does or doesn't. I mean, a lot of what we, the audience, respond to is honesty and vulnerability. You know, why is it that Judy Garland, bang, don't know why I thought of her, I was just thinking of, you know, performers who just, bang, they open up and you hear an open-hearted note, and you don't understand why it is that you connect with them, but you do. You know, when Pavarotti sings, it's this open-hearted, natural communication. It's the undefinable sometimes, I think.
I was just talking with one of the volunteers today about Jeff Buckley, and he said his partner was in an audience, and the thing that he felt that was resounding was the fact that he felt that he was singing just to him.
Well, I guess the thing is that he's opening up, that's why. You know, and he's being really honest. That's what Jeff Buckley was, I think.
So is there, you know, simply to open up means that you can sing to everybody in the audience?
Well, music is that some, you're trying to say that which can't be described. So when someone like Jeff Buckley is, you know, open and honest and he has a lovely voice and there's a freedom about it, yeah, I guess you would think that I can understand that feeling. You have an open communication with him.
And of course, I imagine that the communication will be two-way. So do you feel an energy back from the audience?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What is it?
What is it? Well, it's an acceptance and a sense of, enjoying the moment. I don't know if I can describe it any better than that. An acceptance and a warmth and... like, we're here to enjoy the music, and if you're in a good frame of mind and you're communicating well, you'll get that wave back. You know, that they're enjoying it, and it's an energy that you ride on.
Mm.
You definitely ride on that, and that it's a buoyant feeling. It's a buoyant feeling.
It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor four, the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. That's a beautiful song there. Bit of Jeff Buckley there, as sung by David Hobson. And it sounds quite baritone-ish, doesn't it? Baritone-ish. It's just a word I just made up just then. Oh, dear. That's where we're heading. It's such a beautiful voice. He's kind of, you know, is able to hit those higher notes and able to hit those really low notes. A great diversity of song and sound. And look, I tell you what, it was very enjoyable to have interviewed him. And I hope you enjoyed it too. And it's almost time to finish, so I'm going to leave you with another David Hobson track. And this one's a unique one. He's teamed up with, of course, Symphonia Australis has come back. They were involved in the Pearlfishers before, in the Depths of the Temple, which is the aria that we played before. But he's also teamed up with a gentleman named Brett Weimark, and this is from the album The Promise. And while I did promise a little bit of aha, so wow, this is Take On Me. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
I'll be coming for your love, okay? Take on.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that is one of the most beautiful versions of Take On Me. And I think that the volunteers here at the station have really enjoyed it. They're all kind of, you know, gently swaying back and forth. It could make anybody watching us look feel a bit seasick, but hey, that's what happens when you listen to some beautiful music. Talking of beautiful music, Eric Williams is coming up with Bent Notes, so I do implore you to stick around, because there's going to be 2 hours of lovely jazz, and that song had a bit of a jazzy feel to it, coming up. So stick around, and as I always say each week, and I'm sure Mr. Hobson would himself say, I'll catch you next week. Same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel. This has been The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Actually, and before we go, I should say that I'll put the playlist up on the blog as well. So if you want to find out more about any of those tracks, you can check out joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. So there you go. See you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.